When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 488. Tim Miller, the disc golf guy, not quite next to Johnny V tonight. We're going remote, doing this thing from home.
You were a little lazy, didn't want to come over. I mean, I don't think you put pants on today, probably. That's my guess.
Maybe,
I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
That's for the after show. regardless, yes, a little bit of snow coming through Wisconsin in the Midwest. In fact, I talked to a gentleman down in Kansas today, and he said they got 10 inches, which is far more than what we actually received here in Wisconsin. So I feel like a little bit of a baby, but our kids both had schools called off. They were anticipating, I think, even more than what we received. And since we haven't had any snow this year, they decided to be extra cautious on everyone today. So kind of a weird day in Wisconsin and probably throughout the Midwest.
Yeah, I heard like 70% of our country is under some sort of cold advisory. You know, obviously that changes depending on where you're at. A cold advisory in Oklahoma and northern Texas is going to be a little bit different than a cold advisory here, but I know obviously with something like Oklahoma, they get hit with a lot of ice storms. But anyway, in Texas versus, you know, Arizona. So we're talking to a friend in Arizona today. It was 32 degrees there. And they ain't ready for that.
No, and they shouldn't be rivaling what we're seeing in Wisconsin because we were in that neighborhood. So understandable if everyone's a little chilly out there. So hopefully everybody is safe. I know there's parts of the country without power. I know there was a tornado that went through in the Gulf area. So hopefully everyone is safe. So tonight here in our second podcast of 2024, a couple of very special guests. I think without further ado, we're going to get right to our first one. I don't know how he hasn't been on here. Maybe he took offense to that. Maybe that's why he decided to go start his own kick-ass podcast. And he does some incredible things. And we're talking about Jesse Stedman from Trash Panda. Jesse, how you doing, man?
Deeply offended and excited to be here. So thanks for having me on.
Which is, to be honest, that's probably most of our guests. Deeply offended, but excited to be on.
I'm of course kidding. I'm very happy to be here. Happy to be inside. Like you talking about the weather in Denver, we're having the same. So it's been quite chilly lately.
Okay. And you're a guy, unlike Johnny and I, who just, you know, now talk and live and breathe disc golf, but you go out and like day to day experience it. You're molding and shaping and doing things. And then like you're making a video out of it. I feel like every other day or on definitely more of a creation schedule.
Yeah, we're definitely living and breathing disc golf over here, not to be confused with playing disc golf. My longest streak on UDisc last year, week to week, was one. So we don't play a lot of disc golf when we work in disc golf, but loving it nonetheless and doing what I love.
easily the number one misconception, I think, in our entire sport, right? That, well, I'm just going to get a job in disc golf and then I'll play it all the time. And if you're doing your job well and you love it, you're probably not playing too much unless it's exclusively as a professional.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Jesse. So let's get to the basics. I think it would be crazy that someone watches us that doesn't know who you are and what you do. But nonetheless, this is your first time here. So rather than me try to screw anything up, why don't you go ahead and give us your full introduction? Tell us, you know, what you've been doing and why we should know you and what you've been up to the last few years.
Yeah. So I started a company called Trash Panda Disc Golf. So our whole mission is about sustainability, and specifically we do that by making discs out of 100% recycled plastic. So that's kind of our shtick and the very high level version of it. But you know, people might have run across us on YouTube or Instagram. Content is a big part of what we do. Storytelling is a big part of what we do. Also, brand partnerships are huge for us. So those are kind of our three things. It's content, manufacturing, and partnerships. So someone might have seen us through one of those things. Or if you've seen a blue unstamped disc out in the world, likely it was one of ours. That's another thing. But yeah, we're most known for making discs out of 100% recycled plastic.
So the recycled plastic you get, that's not necessarily recycled discs. That's just general recycled plastic. That could be, heaven forbid, water bottles or any sort of plastic that's out in the environment. Is that correct?
Totally. Specific to the plastic that's used for premium and baseline plastic discs, it's typically something that's coming from either like a, if it's not a disc, so we do recycle discs. However, if it's not a disc, it's likely going to be coming from medical, automotive, sporting good, agriculture type industries. TPU is premium plastic, and it's like, it's not your go-to plastic water bottle or, you know, takeout container, but it might be the soft plastic on your toothbrush. It might be the all-weather floor mats in your car. So it's all around and it's crazy abundant, but specifically like plastic water bottles, those would not make the best discs in the world just because of the type of plastic.
Well, and backing up even more so than that, of course, I think it's an incredible journey and effort and everything that you've accomplished. Where did this come from? Like, what is this your background? Is this what you studied in school? You know, how did you arrive at the idea? Hey, let's quit.
Yeah.
Let's quit doing
this. No, not in the slightest as my background. So I started playing disc golf in 2008. I was a freshman in high school and just found the sport, fell in love with it, played. I mean, summers in high school and college, it was daily. There were times throughout the semester that it would be daily. It became quickly my like top hobby. And for many, I think can relate to this. It became therapy for me. It was just like the thing I would go out and do solo. I would spend so much time doing it. And I absolutely loved it. Funny enough, never played a PDGA sanctioned event for all those 12 years leading up to starting Trash Panda. I'm not a super competitive guy, but it just became this thing that I loved, and there was never like this specific moment, but I remember throughout all of that time thinking, we're using so much plastic and we're outside. Where's the recycled plastic? And we would see it here and there, but it really wasn't like talked about and there wasn't a lot of it. And not being my background, I thought, simple. I could make a disc out of recycled plastic in my garage. How hard could it be? So Actually, the origin story of Trash Panda is one that a lot of people are familiar with too. But I built an injection machine in my garage that operated, it injected on my body weight. Like I would hang on the bar and it would inject the disc. And that was kind of how we prototyped for the first couple of years. That was how we made our first products. And I learned how hard it was and how complicated this simple idea I had was, but I'm so happy I was naive, because had I not been naive, we were actually talking about this as a team today. You know, now I have a staff of people, like we're doing this daily, And we were talking as a team today about the dangerous combination of passion and naivete. And that's kind of where we started.
When you saw that, the diss, and then you thought, oh, hey, why am I not doing this? Or maybe, hey, I could make this. Clearly, like you said, you didn't necessarily know everything that went into it. What's been the most, I mean, there's so much you've learned, but what do you feel like has been maybe the most surprising or maybe the most underrated that just people don't think about or realize in a disc making process?
I mean, plastic, when I started, plastic is plastic is plastic. Yes, we all have, like, we all know that there's different versions and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, in my head, when I started, I knew nothing. I was like, you could combine them all. You can recycle them together, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, why couldn't there be a plastic mm-hmm. water bottle and a disc? And now it's like, I'll go through a couple of the steps of how complex it was. So first, we started with polypropylene and high-density polyethylene. Those are two of the most common post-consumer worldwide plastics out there. They make absolutely horrible discs. They can be used in the disc process, but they by themselves are, you know, super hard trash can lid kind of things. So started there, learned that there were multiple types of plastic. So you've got your ones through sevens, right? On the bottom of a product, you're going to have a number one or a number two or number three. I was like, okay, at least I know now there's seven types of plastic. Turns out number seven, I went through all seven. By the time I got to seven, number seven stands for mixed. And that means every other type of plastic out there. So now I'm like, okay, all of a sudden there's thousands of types of plastic and I start going through those. Eventually we find, this is years, by the way, of learning, but we find that TPU is fantastic. I could show you a TPU that is a floppy disk, and I could show you the hardest disk you've ever felt in your life that's TPU. Because TPU also isn't just TPU, but there are hundreds of variations of TPU. So it just, like, as you dive, I'm sorry if that got a little technical, but it,
not
like,
at all.
Plastic seems so simple when in reality, not only is what we're using complex, TPU being the base plastic and premium plastics being one of the hardest plastics to mold with in the injection molding industry outside of disc golf. Then you're talking about making a product that's going to fly 400 feet the exact same every single way or every single time. And not only that, but the injection machine now adds complexities. And then if you add one color versus another color, you add complexities. It just, I could keep going all night. I won't. We don't need to do that. But it's so complex. The fact that you could get two discs that fly the same is mind-blowing to me. So it's what disc golf companies, I get it. It's manufacturers specifically. It's their Coca-Cola secret. They don't want to share a lot. But what they have done is mind-blowing. And I wish they would share more so we could all just have a deeper appreciation for how hard it truly is.
I'm interested in the injection molder that you made in your garage. Did you just Google, like, go to YouTube and be like, DIY injection molder? Like, what did you do to, because I'm thinking right now, how would I do that? Well, the first thing I would do is I would go to YouTube and be like, how do I make an injection molder? And figure out and then like watch like 50,000 videos of people probably doing, you know, tell me how easy it is, tell me how hard it is, tell me how great it is. And then from there, like, is that yeah. kind of,
I mean, I wish it was a fancier story, but yeah, that's pretty much it. It's I'm a learn by doing kind of guy. Mm-hmm. So it was very much like found, there was a company called Precious Plastic that had a bunch of open source machine drawings and designs for like DIY recycling equipment, especially for the global recycling community in places where they could source things and they couldn't source things. So think anywhere from Denver to a third world country, they could make these machines. And I kind of just adapted the plans and built it off of that, but it was really a learn by doing.
I recall one of your videos, you were, as you said, you were literally like pulling a lever and then just like jamming on it, basically, to try and get it to go through.
Yeah.
Which is just hilarious. I mean, that's when you call them the big dogs. You know, if you need a little more of that weight, I'm here for you. But, I mean, thinking about seeing some of these modernized machines, and I've had the pleasure of being at the Latitude factory in Sweden, and I've seen discs made at Legacy and at a few other places. Watching them spit out, you know, more than a disc a minute, and some of it completely automated. Was your goal, or is your goal, to be on a mass, like a mass production schedule, to be making?
Yeah, that's so a great question. I don't know that I had a lot of goals when I set out, but I'm not sure I had specifics in terms of exactly how and what that would look. Because again, this wasn't my background. My background was more on the marketing side of things, which is why we had 10,000 subscribers before we ever had a disc, right? Like that,
yeah.
Because my background's there, not here. So in terms of scale, really when it comes down to it, the goal is to talk the talk and walk the walk. We are on a mission to inspire people to live sustainably, and we're trying to do it ourselves. And so our goal is to divert as much plastic from landfills as possible. We want to recycle as much plastic as possible. Does that mean mass production? Likely it means we've bumped up production. We actually, so we started with minis in the garage on that machine. We started selling them, and I made 5,000 before we scaled our manufacturing. And that was one by one. It took like 10 minutes to make a mini. It was ridiculous. It took 30 minutes to just to prototype a disc at a time, and likely it would be a second or a third, right? So by the time we released our first disc, we had scaled manufacturing with a local manufacturing partner here in Denver. So we have a partnership with a local injection molder, and because of the scale we'd reached on YouTube, and with our story and our mission and the people who had really joined the community, we knew that releasing a disc was not possible in the garage. So to some extent, we've already scaled that first, literally the first drop of the inner core, which was our first disc, sold 10,000 discs. And that would have taken me 2 lifetimes. So I'm very glad we scaled at that point. But yeah, we continue to scale because we continue to recycle more plastic, and that's what we're all about.
That brings up my next question, which is there a different feel because somebody says, hey, I'm buying a disc, I need a more disc. You're trying to reduce plastic and plastic use, but yet you're producing more plastic. Well, you're not really producing more, you're recycling it. So do you see how somebody could like maybe totally come at you with, you know, some kind of almost Harry, like hypocritical perspective?
Yeah, we get those comments daily. 100%.
Okay. Good. I'm not original. I never claimed I was original.
No, we get those. People definitely have their opinions on it. The reality is that disc golfers want more discs, and manufacturers are making more discs. And if you were to ask some of the big manufacturers in the space, why isn't there more recycled plastic? They will tell you point blank, there hasn't been a market for recycled plastic. I like at Trash Panda, we're on a mission to prove that there's a market. Our win ultimately is when everyone else does it too. So discs are going to continue to be made. I would love to see not just Trash Panda being the ones making discs, but, you know, everyone doing it. Are we making more? Yeah. Would it be more sustainable to never start a business and do absolutely nothing in terms of sheer footprint? Maybe, but I believe that inspiration and building up a community of people who are acting in a certain way is going to, in the long run, have significantly more value than I myself ever could.
You'll have to forgive me because I don't recall, but maybe Terry even has a good idea. Wasn't Innova's Echo line some recycled plastic back in the day? I don't know if they're still doing that. I have some old Echo Star I think destroyers from way back in the day somewhere hiding around. Yeah. So I believe it has been done, but I don't know if they're still doing it. Do you know if they're still doing it?
Yeah. Well, first, you should put those on eBay because I'm pretty sure there's like a cult following for the old Echo Destroyers. Second,
that's why Dave Feldberg lost the world championships this year. That's a story for another day, but we'll get Dave to share that one with us. Go on.
I'll tune in for that. There other companies have done recycled. Our big thing is 100% recycled. So EchoStar specifically on Innova's website, you'll find that it's up to 50% recycled. That's kind of their story. And it's recycled using their in-house waste, which is fantastic. I'm not in any way trying to detract that. We've also proven that you can get plastic from other industries, and the disc golf industry could hypothetically not produce any virgin plastic, which would be insane. So that's kind of like there are subtle differences here, but if anyone's doing something with recycled plastic, I'm a fan. It doesn't just have to be Trash Panda. So yeah, you've got Innova's EchoStar, you've got the House of Disc kind of conglomerate, really Trilogy before that had their Latitude line. Their recycled line. You've got, you know, Castoplast did a super small regrind line. They're all over the place. AGL uses recycled plastic in their discs. It's happening, but I think we could do more.
Yeah. So then my next question is, how do you get recycled plastic? I guess I don't know. Do you call up your local, like, you know, your Denver waste management or whatever it is and be like, hey, I want some of your plastic. And can I stop by with a truck and just dump it at my 4x4 and take off? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, there are a handful of complexities here. This really where it gets to is the plastic broker world of people buying and selling plastic, virgin plastic, back in like the 70s or 80s, realized they could make money on selling recycled plastic because no one else was doing it. And so all of a sudden, all these used car salesmen started buying and selling recycled plastic. And basically, there are either local recyclers or there are brokers who you work with to get recycled plastic, because you're looking for something that's as clean as possible, which means it needs to go through a recycling facility that has, you know, state of the art equipment. I wish we could just go to the landfill because that would save costs, but well, you know, then time and the complexities of that. So, and then one of the problems also you deal with is just color. Castoplast regrind famously wasn't super well adopted, even though it felt fantastic. And I actually have two regrind Bergs that I love because it was brown. Because when you mix all the colors together, it just comes out brown. So there's a whole market that buys and sells recycled plastic that helps, you know, basically it's kind of a trickle down. The more that market increases, the more the systems and the processes and the local recycling facilities and the money invested in those improve as well. So that's kind of, it's, you invest at the top hoping that it builds up over time.
Yeah, I can understand, because like the brown plastic, as we know, there's a few colors that are just difficult to find. Greens, browns, blacks. You know, those are, I look at drivers and I see those for the most part, and I kind of shy away from those particular colors. Yeah. I mean, you know, I know I've got a black Undertaker in my bag, and I sometimes, depending on the time of day, I might not throw it. I'm like, it's getting a little too dark. I'm not going to bother with this one. We'll just going to throw something that I, you know, that might work just as well. So, all right. So you can,
there are two colors that are pretty easy to get in the recycling industry, and that's brown and black. So it's a little bit of a game there, but, yeah, it's super interesting. I mean, we've gone so far as to call injection molding companies in our state and nearby states just saying, hey, do you use this type of plastic? If you do, are you throwing it away? We'd like to buy it from you. We'd like to, you know, help you recycle it, whatever needs to happen. And then the other thing we launched earlier this year is our disc recycling program. So over the 3 years leading up to earlier this year, we kind of just like people started sending discs to recycle, like chewed up by their dog or just too beat up for them or cracked in half. And I was like, there are not that many people out there who have, you know, boxes of discs that they need to recycle. And over time, we just built up such a collection that I was like, okay, let's launch this thing. Let's try to launch a full-blown program that we can actually recycle and stuff like that. To date, we've received well over 10,000 discs from individuals, retailers, and manufacturers that we've recycled. We're actually north of the 20,000 number at this point. Today, I went to the warehouse and there were 4 new boxes of discs from individuals that had showed up, and we offset the carbon emissions. They get a discount on our website. We'll recycle the discs. It's a really nice relationship that, crazy enough, there's a lot of people who want to recycle discs out there. And if it comes to us and it still has life left in it, we won't grind it down, because at the end of the day, like, it doesn't do anything to take a good disc and make another good disc out of it other than waste energy. So we donate those to Uplay or local schools and whatnot.
Yeah, I imagine that was like a big scenario. Sorry, Terry. I imagine a big scenario. Like, I remember the first time I broke a disc, like an old Stratus. We were on spring break. I hit something on whatever, and it just cracked right in half. And all I thought was, all right, well, all right. And walked over to the trash can, you know,
yeah.
Put it in my bag and dropped it in the trash can, and it, forever to be gone. And all I think now is I could see a future in local leagues, or even kind of like what we do with our ice bowls, where everybody brings their broken discs. You save them throughout the year. You bring them, and then your club maybe sends them to something like a Trash Panda to do disc recycling. That would be amazing.
And clubs and retailers can get a discount on their future orders with us doing that. We've set up the system, and it's working well with the people who are using it. It's surprising that there are discs out there like this many, but there really are. And we've also identified that if a disc ends up, discs are very hard to recycle products because no one knows what's in them unless you have insider knowledge. We luckily have that now, so we're able to do it. But if a disc ends up at a recycling facility that's set up to recycle your common day-to-day plastics or products, rather, it likely won't get recycled. And we actually received a box from a retailer who received it from a recycler because they didn't know what to do with it. And so we've actually proven that that's the case, that recyclers don't know what to do, and that plastic is going to be here long after we're gone. So we'd like to see it fly again.
With that in mind, what are the legalities or stipulations when it comes to denoting a plastic type? Is where does, why don't we have to stamp an 8 or a 4 or a 7 or whatever on the back of our plastic disc, or why wouldn't the manufacturers? Where do those legalities and that reasoning come from?
Yeah, I believe I'm going to defer hard and say, don't quote me on this, to disc.law or someone else who actually knows. However, I'll say that my understanding is that most of those are specific to industries, and there's regulations within industries. For example, children's toys. There's more regulation there than there is in the disc golf disc world. And so I'm not sure exactly where the lines are on that. But what's crazy is that if we did have to put the number on it, we would all be putting the number 7 on it, because that's mixed and no one would know what it is still. So yeah, it's still like, yeah, it's still an interesting thing. The numbers are like a identification system that's relatively, it works. It's also broken. So
yeah, because I imagine we hear about this all the time, and people get really excited about different blends of plastic for different, like, oh, I've got the, you know, burst blend, this or that, that's half this plastic and half that plastic. Like, just our whole industry is almost built lately on, you know, probably every single one of the halos or orbits or whatever those are could be different types, a slightly different type of plastic versus however. Yeah, that's, man.
Well, makes we know that overmolding is technically doing that. So you know, over molding, you're looking at two different, they might not be different plastics. You might have TPU and TPU on top of each other, but one might be a super low density and one might be a super high density. That's, if it's not, then what they're telling us isn't happening. But if it is, then that's gyroscopic stability right there. So, yeah, we've seen it.
Have you talked to manufacturers? Have they been open with you at all as far as like, oh, like reach out and say, hey, I have this older Eagle. What type of plastic is in here? I mean, are the other manufacturers cooperative with you, or is it still pretty close to the chest?
Yeah, it's a little bit, it's definitely still close to the chest in terms of some of the players in the game. Basically, our relationship with manufacturers at this point is we work with a handful. Some were able to say, some were not able to say. And then we have reached out to some who have said, hey, we don't have any of what you're talking about. I'm not going to name anyone because I'm not willing to do that. But some are open, some aren't open. We're trying to work with them. And then funny enough, you know, you do a little bit of research or you do some testing and you can find some information that's pretty helpful. So like, recently we started the disc recycling program, and like maybe 2 months later, one of the guys at Innova did a Reddit AMA, and in the some of the answers to the questions, there were some answers that helped us figure out where Pro fit into the recycling capacity, even though he wasn't answering that question. So it just depends. Some are open, some aren't so open, but you know, I don't mean to spoil premium plastic, but premium plastic is basically TPU. So it's 90% that, with small variation here and there, and those small variations make a big difference. So that's why Supreme and Lucid or Fusion feel so different, right? Because there are those small differences that make a big difference. So I don't mean to say what they're doing isn't massive, because they are making big differences. It's still the same type of plastic at the end of the day.
Maybe you could dispel at least one rumor that I heard more than a decade ago. And maybe you can, or maybe you don't know. someone once told me, who I trusted with their degree of knowledge of plastics and injection molding, somebody once told me that it was actually cheaper to make a Star or a Champion, that was the brand at the time, a Star or a Champion disc than a DX disc, and that due to the plastics or whatever else, but it was actually cheaper, but due to the strength and the marketing and the actual strength of the discs, it was obvious, it was upside down, in that we were paying.
Interesting.
Is that just some silly thing I heard?
I wouldn't. I don't. So bottom line, I don't know. Also, plastic markets are like this. They're crazy. Yeah,
sure.
Could that be possible? Yes.
Okay.
But then you're determining price not on, hey, how much is like, how much does this cost us, but how much value does this bring to the consumer too? So there's that equation. And when you break it down to like wholesale cost, and you look at a wholesale cost, because that's really what the biggest players are thinking mostly with their costs, then the difference between those is so minimal that like, yeah, when you expand it out, 15 and 22 looks a lot different, but you know, 8 and 11 or whatever, 8 and 10, it's pretty close. So could that be possible though? Sure. Yeah. 100%. I can't say for sure.
And again, I guess this is kind of a tangent to what you're just talking about with working with the companies, or not. What would you say is the most impressive thing that you currently see done? And maybe it's what you're doing with the work you've done, but when you see, I mean, because you have a totally different look. When a piece of plastic comes out, everybody's talking about the flight numbers, blah, blah, don't even get me started. Flight numbers and all this other random stuff, the marketing, who's throwing it, the company, the pricing, is it tour series, is it special edition, blah, blah, blah. You have a completely different look when you pick up a piece of plastic than most, or at least the insider knowledge. So with all of that, is there a process or something that, you know, happened years ago, a new benchmark, anything like that, that you're like, damn, like that is or was awesome or ahead of its time? Is there anything like that?
I mean, there's a handful of things. When you look at especially the last year or two on the disc manufacturing side of things, it has been the season of releases. I mean, release after release after release after release, like so many things. Some companies are doing something every single week. I'm looking at it now and going, it's so saturated. Now it's even more interesting what sticks out. To be honest, the things that stick out now, I think there's some cool things being done and there's some unique things. In my head, it's a combination. Like the way I look at things is manufacturing and storytelling. So the product itself is one thing, but the packaging, I'm super interested in how manufacturers are bringing something to market and how, you know, how does something rise to the fame that it does? You know, did the Innova Rollo pop off because of the video that they made with Dave about it? Or did it pop off because Joseph from another round couldn't stop throwing it and all of a sudden it was all over Instagram? You know, like those are super interesting things to me. I'm not making a point there, by the way. I think that's hard to track. So I'm not trying to sure. say one or the other. I'll say this.
It was the Jeff Panis commercial that played on Disc Golf Network, where the disc just kept rolling and kept rolling.
Yeah. That was good. So the one to me that sticks out, if I'm looking at one manufacturer going, they're what they did was so interesting. Quest Advanced Technologies. I'm all over Quest. I know it's a little bit of a throwback. Steve, rest in peace. I wish he was still alive so I could meet him and just tell him how much I respect him. The things he did were mind blowing. If anyone's listening to this who doesn't know, Quest is like Turbo Putt is probably the most well known that you'd know him for, but there's so many, the 10 meter brick, the T-bone, backbone, the brick, the 100 meter laser, the crossfire, like they're crazy discs. He made a disc that was, it's right here, but I'm not going to show it. It's going to be a video coming soon for Trash Panda, but, I'm going to do a whole video on Quest, but, he made a disc that is literally the same on the top and bottom.
I don't remember
why.
Okay.
What are we doing? Cause it doesn't matter. The dude was not limited. Mm-hmm. His limit was where his mind could go. And it was so like, it's so cool to see the things he did. He was, if you talk to Dave McCormick at Gateway, he knew him closely. He knew Steve mm-hmm. closely and worked closely with him. He talks about that guy with such admiration too. I mean, I think what he did was insane. And were some of the ideas horrible? Yeah, but like, who cares? You're trying things and that's so cool to see. So yeah, Quest is the cornerstone.
For wow. That is, that's it. I saw his operation. I visited him at his house. He was in Northern Illinois. Illinois, in a suburb, I want to say like Lake Villa, Illinois. I had bought discs from him. You know, he used to pull around a trailer, with like his Saturn or something, a car that didn't seem like it really could pull this trailer full of Frisbees around, or he packed them in there weird.
Yeah.
Just an incredible guy. And of course the Turbo Putt's like this meme disc, you know, so to speak today.
And for those that don't know, the Turbo Putt looks like a gear. It looks like it's got the knobs all around the cert, all around the edge that you would put your fingers between, so you'd get better rotation on your during your turbo.
And it has a spiral on the bottom of the rim where your thumb can go.
And you can adjust it to base. Yeah.
I mean, what a horrible, beautiful idea, right? Like, that disc is such a, why can't we go there? Why can't we try some things? You know, like, I think that's super cool. And, you know, modern day, I don't even want to say someone, 'cause I'm going to forget someone, but you look at, Loft discs, they're doing some really innovative things that are really cool to see. The Boreum was special, in my opinion, even though some people don't like it. Most recently, the overmolding that Clash was doing, it got a lot of positive and a lot of negative. And to be honest, like, if you're trying something, you're going to get a lot of positive and a lot of negative. So more power to the people who are trying. I love it.
So looking at your lineup of discs, I'm on trashpandadiscgolf.com. I see the Inner Core and the Dune. Is that the extent of the lineup right now?
That's the lineup right now.
Kind of.
Well, there's the illegal discs too. I'm going to put that in quotes because those are not PDGA approved.
Those are just, you know, outside of the weight range. I think Terry's saying kind of because what day is it? Tuesday? Yeah. Yep. Yesterday we had our third disc approved, the Ozone. So that'll be coming out this year. It's a fairway driver.
Wasn't there already a disc named the Ozone? I swear to God, I have one. Like,
I think that's a zone.
Nope.
I think
you're thinking about. Nope.
There was a defunct manufacturer called Ozone.
Oh,
they
made
a disc called the, I want to say it's like Andro C or something.
It's the one with the insert.
Yeah.
Yes. I ordered that.
An innovative manufacturer that tried something different. And
I think it's literally like right there. It's right there.
Yeah. The actually going back to Quest, I'll just quickly say, Turbo Putt, Steve was pretty open about how Turbo Putt was really hard for him because he put it out into the world and then it got PDGA approved and then pulled out of PDGA approval. And the reception from the community was really hard for him. And that's the one thing I want to see, is I just want to see the community rally around, like, great ideas. Let's have fun. Let's try something new. I'm trying to think of the ones that are happening now. So my mind also went to Discraft recently doing the Zone Battle Pack with the Banger and the, Ringer Zone. That's so cool. Bringing people into the process and choosing the mold. Like, that's the stuff that's standing out, you know? So yeah, I think, seeing people innovate is really cool. I'm a fan of the future, hence sustainability. I want to see people playing disc golf in 500 years. I won't see it. I want it to happen much longer than I'm here, but, I like innovation outside of that too.
So this kind of goes with what we were just talking about, Steve, and then the Turbo Putt being, you know, legal and then not. And I think that sets such an interesting precedent just for all of disc golf. If you've been around long enough to know of that story and how that all unfolded and kind of the process there, which reminds me, I've got a video I need to release about a disc getting PDGA approved, like what goes into it. We filmed the entire process happening at Masters Worlds this year. So,
oh, nice.
It's really cool. Jeff Homburg, you know, did it. Cool. He had all the tools, explained what he was doing and making all the marks and everything else for it, measurements. Speaking of that innovation, I specifically, in terms of recycling, old school, I went with the Vibram Polo tonight.
Yeah.
All right, this is more than 10 years old, right? This polo is 10 years old. Vibram, of course, got into the game for a little while with the rubber discs. I saw those manufactured, actually. I was at Qualberg and saw Vibram discs made. I put out a video for that. Really crazy process.
Quick side tangent.
Yeah, what are your thoughts?
When I started, I, of course, went immediately and said, how are discs made on YouTube? And there's nothing except for one video from Terry Miller that's like, here are the quickest shots of the Vibram process. And Vibram is compression molding, not injection molding. Mm-hmm. So it's a completely different process. And I'm like looking as close as I can, trying to find out how it's happening. That was that's just a side tangent I had to share. But I've, however many views that video has, I'm half of them just on repeat trying to figure out what's going on.
I should bring it back out because, again, I think some of that stuff, you know, that was a different world when I had, you know, a tenth of the subscribers, and there's a lot of good, I think, gems hidden out there. But anyway, when you, does that excite you? I, of course, you've been talking in plastics and recycling the plastics and everything you've learned about plastics. Is there a world where you're thinking, yeah, you know, Vibram is a viable solution or any other materials? Or are these all trade secrets here? You're keeping under patent law right now.
I'm going to say something, and there every time I say this, people don't believe me, and I could not mean it more. Our win is everyone else's win. I have no trade secrets. I am not trying to hide anything. I would love our trade secret is 100% recycled plastic. We're shouting it from the rooftops. So really, when it comes down to it, I have nothing to hide. As far as other materials, so bioplastics are a conversation, which are plastics that basically are made using bio, like basically corn oil, oils that are more natural oil than raw. I'm sorry, my words. What time is it? 7:45. This is too early for me
It's not necessarily made from crude oil. It's made crude. From other oils.
Crude is the word. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Crude was what I was looking for. So crude, it's not made from crude oils. It's made from like your vegetable or naturally occurring oil or renewable oils. So bio is super interesting. A lot of people mix up bioplastic with biodegradable. The biodegradable side of things has a long way to go, and it's currently in the hard plastics world. As far as when we could see a disc that could be thrown into the forest that if it was lost would just biodegrade and it'd all be fine, we're years from there. But that would be crazy one day. So bio is interesting. The only time we've really seen that in disc golf was Latitude's release of Ecoplastic, which didn't have the best reception. It was baseline. It was like a baseline comparison, being a little stiffer. Some loved it. Some didn't love it. So bio's interesting. Rubber is very interesting because rubber, specifically Vibram, is made from what's referred to as a non-recyclable rubber. That doesn't mean it can't be recycled. For example, tracks, turf fields, playgrounds, we often see like tires are also made out of a non-recyclable rubber, but they can be, that means they can't be melted down, but they can be recycled. I believe Elevation Discs was doing something with recycled tires, which means there may be a way to melt them down, which is awesome. I don't have knowledge in that space. So one day we may start looking in some of these other categories and, you know, trying out recycled rubber or trying out bioplastics. At the moment, there's still so much for us to learn. I mean, our learning curve is insane at Trash Panda. And Every time we learn something, I feel like we're still at the bottom of the learning curve. So recycled plastic is kind of the focus right now. But yeah, there's definitely some other interesting ones out there.
So I've got two other questions. You now have, with the Ozone, you're going to have a fairway driver, a mid-range, and a putter. With the recycled plastic, have you found that one of those styles of discs is harder to make than another? I feel like you need to be more drivers in my head feel like they would require more consistency than a putter, so to speak. I feel like there's a little bit more play when you have a putter and the consistency of the throw, maybe because we're throwing it not quite as far, but do you have, is there a particular disc that's harder to make with the recycled plastic?
Well, consistency is definitely harder when the wing shape is more pronounced like a driver. So that doesn't necessarily mean on the injection molding side, it's harder to make, but consistency as an experience to the individual playing disc golf is definitely more obvious when you're throwing 14 speed versus one speed, right? In terms of what we've learned, really at this point, we have the fairway driver approved. We've really made the putter in mid. So at a production scale. So for me to speak to it, it's hard for me to speak beyond mid-range, which five speed specifically. So as far as what we've learned in terms of is one harder than the other, with recycled plastics, the variance between the putter and the mid-range hasn't been much. And I anticipate there will be a little bit to the putter, or I'm sorry, to the fairway, but not too much as well. Probably a little more. But the problem with recycled plastic comes in when you're an injection molding machine is this massive machine that's designed for consistency. Terry, earlier you talked about automation. I'm sure in your head you're looking at robots in Sweden that are running these discs. Like, it's all about automation. It's all about consistency. And the machine is optimized for consistency, but to do that, you have to feed a material in that is consistent. And that's where virgin plastic comes in. If you throw that out the window and it's 100% recycled, all of a sudden it creates a lot of complications because that consistency is very, very complicated to achieve. So I say that, I don't mean to say, hey, making discs is harder for us. It is using recycled plastic is harder, but making discs is hard, period. So again, what manufacturers are doing is very admirable.
And what it's funny you say that. I think of how sometimes hypocritical our sport is with consistency, in that we look at, I'm just going to throw Innova out there with the Sexton Firebirds. Every year they come out and they fly a little different. Some people love the 2016s because they're more flippy. I don't know. Someone's going to get really mad at me because I don't know those things. Some of them are less flippy every year. And people are like, well, these were the best run. I don't think necessarily that, you know, if I got an Ozone that was blue, that was maybe a little more flippy than a red Ozone, it's like, oh, I don't think I would have a problem with that. It's like, oh, cool, I got a more stable one. Or I got a little bit less stable one. The hard part, obviously, is knowing what you're going to get ahead of time. I mean, we've all seen the Destroyer mold video that hit hard like 2 years ago, where he showed you the different bent, like the different wings and whatnot. So are you worried about consistency for your drivers, or is there, or have you found what's more consistent? Like, blue ones do this, red ones do this, clear ones.
So yeah, I mean, am I worried about consistency? 100%. We're using a completely inconsistent feedstock. I don't even know what I'll be using a year from now. Right. So I don't even have that material. So in terms of consistency, yes, I'm concerned. It was something we kind of had a little bit of foresight on early on, and we put a little engraving on the bottom of the disc. It's a kind of a rotating dial that says the exact date that the disc was made. So if you have a clear inner core that was made in December of 2023, you can likely find another clear inner core made in December of 2023. And it's going to be from the same run. Right. So we tried to create that like transparency with what run each disc was from. But in terms of consistency, it really comes down to the individual, because I am such a casual player. Like, I only bought discs from a used bin for 12 years. Like, I'm with you. I don't care if this disc flies a little different than it says it will. I'm going to throw it 100 times. I'm going to know exactly what it does, and it's going to do what I need. Whereas if I'm a pro who throws this disc, I know, in the water, I need to make sure that I can grab another one and it's going to do the same thing. So it really depends on the person. And I can't even begin to comprehend that, because I don't really care. But for that person, they can probably not comprehend my perspective, right?
Well, so take any disc, go out to a wooded course, and that disc is probably walking off the course different than when you bought it. You know, because we're none of us seem to be, if we were that good at throwing, we wouldn't be doing this. We'd be on the pro tour. But you talk about pros. You guys just signed your first pro sponsorship. Yeah. You have Erica Stinchcomb now. Tell us a little bit about that process and working with Erica.
Yeah, we're absolutely stoked about it. So Erica was someone we met about a year ago, kind of just started chatting, had a few conversations here or there, didn't really think much of it, but there was definitely an alignment of values. And then really, to our surprise, we released our baseline plastic, so our putter inner core, and she started putting with it and putted for the duration of the pro tour since, like, I think she started at OTB last year, and for the rest of the pro tour, she putted with our disc and completely, like, unsolicited, did it on her own. It was awesome. And she decided she wanted to keep going this year. We had some conversations. Honestly, sponsoring pros has been always one step further than we're at right now for me. And the only thing that could bring it sooner was an alignment of values. And it's there with Erica. She's from Montana. She's, you know, in love with the outdoors. Sustainability is huge in her life. There was this alignment there, and it just made sense. So we were stoked to kind of bring the two brands together and see what we could do.
And with Erica, first of all, congratulations to both you and her. With her, is that going to be specific to being a quote unquote putter sponsorship? Like I've seen Drew Gibson go out and seek out. Is that, or do you expect her to be throwing, or has she fallen in love with at least the other disc?
Great question. She's obligated to throw one of our discs. That's it. There's no specific disc that she has to throw. It's really up to her. She had already chosen to putt with the inner core again this year. So she's already checked that box. If she wants to throw the dune, by the way, we differentiate between the putting inner core and the throwing inner core, because again, being sponsoring pros, being one step ahead, to me, it was like, we've got one disc. Hey, be on our team, and you have to throw at least one of our discs. Oh, by the way, you have to like this disc. Like, that's just ridiculous. Uh-huh. So we kind of differentiate between the two, inner core and then the dune. And really, it's up to her. She's already checked that box. It's not something I'm really even concerned about. Again, it's the alignment of values. It's so much more than the game for the reason that we decided to partner up.
No, that's awesome. Now, with everything you've learned and continue to learn and will, I don't want to say fight through, but I'm sure you're obviously adhering to PDGA tech standards. This is not a anti-PDGA question at all. My question, though, is there a standard you disagree with or would love slightly altered or changed or maybe more variance, whatever that is? Or maybe, since I know what they are, but why don't you explain kind of what, first of all, what some of the tech standards are for a new disc, and then answer the question as to if there's anything you'd love to see tweaked or changed out of the standards.
The technical standards are, for those who don't know, a box, and your disc has to fit somewhere inside of this box, if you will. So in terms of what they are, they're pretty open. There's not too many that are prohibitive, other than like the diameter has to be smaller than this amount. And basically that means you can't make a hula hoop, which if someone was going to do that, that'd be crazy. So, as far as the technical standards, they're, to me, we're innovating the material. We're not innovating the disc per se at the moment. So I'm perfectly happy with where the technical standards are at. To be honest, I think they need just from my opinion, and this is of no offense to the technical standards working group, they need some actual technical people to come in and bring it into the 21st century. It's very old school manual in how it's done. It's very manual. It's very, yeah. And they just, by the way, I hope that they don't take that offense to that. But also, if they do, here's a positive I'll throw their way. It costs $300 to get a disc approved. And here's the one I would like to see change. I'd like to see the price for how much it costs to get a disc approved increased. Now, this year, it's getting increased from $300 to $500. I would like to see it get increased way more than that, because you should be very serious if you're going to get a disc approved. You shouldn't just be able to throw $500 at it. For some people, $500 is a lot, but for businesses who are bringing something to market, if they're already looking at building a $20,000-plus tool, $500 is a non sequitur. So I think we're seeing so many people come into it and so many discs that are doing some of the same things. In my opinion, what I would like to see is just a higher bar for people to jump over, so that if you really are serious about it, go for it.
That's interesting.
Well, yeah. I was going to follow that up with,
not,
do you
not like sexy thing to say too? Like, not a,
oh, it's a hot, it's a hot take here.
Yeah, that's a,
well,
I don't know.
Is that then rooted also in your mission of, well, maybe that would weed out a few of these people who, like you said, maybe aren't serious, but also that's just that so much less plastic that's probably going to get wasted because they are taking it more serious, because it does cost more. Do you feel like that might, like, just weed out some of the wasted, failed endeavors?
I think the amount of plastic is going to be determined by the market at the end of the day. So if the market blows up, whether there's three manufacturers or 300, ultimately those three manufacturers will scale to meet the market demand. So I think that the amount of discs are going to be out there. To me, it just weeds out people who, like, we don't need more noise by people who just aren't as serious about it. And there's no one in my head, by the way, who I'm thinking of. And I could not be more serious about that.
You're not thinking of yourself 3 years ago that was like, man, I'm not paying those a-holes $1,000 to send them my Frisbee. I mean, would you have been excited about that?
When I first saw it, I thought $300 is nothing for me to, for the amount of time I put, it took us 2.5 years to get our first disc to market. I put so much blood, sweat, and tear and thousands of dollars into this thing. $300, I was fine spending that. Oh, by the way, your first year, you get half off. So it was $150. So I was fine with it. As far as it doesn't need to change. It's not going to make or break the future of the sport. To me, it's just one of those things that the PDGA could charge a little more, and then they could be bringing in, you know, much more high-tech equipment to do these approvals, to innovate the sport. The money could be going to build things and tools and different things to really innovate the sport, or standardize things like flight numbers. And then, you know, you'd have people who are more serious about it. So I just think raise the price a little bit. By the way, I'm not thinking of my bottom line here, because I'm happy with a lower price. But yeah, it's...
Well, and I think... Okay, so like, I think something like that, and I haven't thought enough about it to know whether I agree or disagree with it, but what I can imagine is we don't need to have every disc PDGA approved. Like, you have it yourself, your illegal discs are too heavy or too whatever. But if play pretend, because we mentioned it earlier, the Rolo, if Innovo was just like, cool, we're going to make a fun disc. This is a Rolo. You don't have to throw it at, you can't throw it at PDGA events. It's just kind of a Frisbee or whatever you want to call it. It's a disc. Yeah. Any casual can still go and play. You said yourself, you played 12 years without ever playing a sanctioned event. Like, what's, you know, I don't necessarily think we need to have every single disc that's molded PDGA approved, and maybe increasing that price could do something like that. I don't necessarily know if I'm for or against that, but it's definitely an interesting take.
I too have not thought enough about the repercussions, so I just threw it out there and am now circling in my brain.
Oh, but it's forever on the internet now. No, you didn't.
Yeah. So I'm happy you said that because it made me think of two discs. One is there was the original Ninja from Gateway, which had mm-hmm. too wide of a rim and was thus never PDGA approved. And they stamped on it, not intended for PDGA play. And that's a super interesting disc. Then modern day, you have, I didn't mention them and I'm happy you brought it up because it made me think of them. Doomsday discs. They're doing some really interesting things. You might have heard of the Landmine, which is like a pull cat to the 10th degree with super extreme lid. But they also have a disc called the Weapon of Mass Destruction, I think. Don't quote me on this, but that's also a disc that's too wide, not intended for PDGA play, never approved, but you can throw it so far with so much ease. And then they also have like a Condor diameter, like T-Bird, Thunderbird-esque disc, which is crazy. And so it's super cool. I like seeing different stuff. I think that's cool. So shout out to them too. That one's interesting.
Again, we know you're not going to name any names. You're not going to give us that much, but how often, maybe here's how I'll word it. How often, if ever, do you just roll your eyes or throw your hands up or slam your desk in disgust when you see some of the marketing and or ploys that you just know are BS? Or do we not have a lot of that in our sport? I mean, again, you have such an insider, different, unique perspective now. And you're coming in with so many other established. I mean, do you see something posted and you're just like, oh my, like that's so. Do you ever get that? Are you too positive for that?
I'm definitely optimistic to a fault, and I think that to me, it's just I don't know. Some people sometimes I'll see things. And if I saw myself do them, I would roll my eyes all day. But the reality is that we see the world from different perspectives. And so, you know, I believe that we can all grow this pie together. And there's like this Harvard Business Review article that was about pie enlargers versus pie slicers. And some people believe that for me to grow my slice of the pie, I have to actually take some of your slice. And then there's some people who believe that we can just grow the pie. We can keep our slices. And if we work together to grow the pie, all of our slices grow bigger. It's a business mm-hmm. analogy, but I see the world that way. And I think we can work together. To be honest, sustainability is that way. It's we say this sometimes, it's not about someone doing everything, but rather everyone doing something. To us, mm-hmm. that's like a hugely important piece of it. It's not about Trash Panda. It's about all of us doing something. And so when I look at people, when I see things, I have a hard time rolling my eyes because they just see the world differently than I do. And that's okay. So that's my, I don't know. That's my non-answer, but that's just how I am.
Well, let me again, I'm going to go, this digs way back to, as Johnny mentioned earlier, Ecoplastic from, or Ecoplastic from Innova.
Eco.
Someone once said to me, again, here's my disclaimer. Someone once said to me, yeah, that's great. They're doing it. The full color sticker that they're putting on that disc to differentiate it and to tell you that it's eco plastic or whatever is doing more damage than probably what they're doing to recycle it in the first place. And that was an interesting take. I have no idea, of course, if that was true, but just I'll say a naysayer had said that to me. And it really was interesting because that's where you're blending the practicality of some form of recycling, but then the marketing that goes with it. And is that, you know, so to speak, offsetting in any capacity? I thought that was a really interesting way that I heard that said.
Yep.
Way back when Ecoplastic came out.
I feel like you could say that about anything though, almost like, oh, the You know, the amount of electricity you're using to run the presses to redo these discs is, you know, is hurtful for the environment. Or, you know, the extra gas it takes to drive now these additional discs. I feel like you could find a naysayer with almost any aspect. And I'm kind of with Jesse. What he said earlier is it's just like it's nice to see people trying these things, whether you can pick apart anything.
That's what I'm here for.
I've got two thoughts on that. Well, I've got three. First is retitle the episode to Terry tries to get Jesse to call someone out because
Welcome to Smashbox.
I'm totally joking.
So my two thoughts with this are, on the one hand, I have one primary thought here, and it's that we live in a world that is at an all-time high when it comes to accountability. The customer and the consumer cares. People actually care. And so what are you doing? Be honest about it, be truthful about it, be transparent, and like try to do better. Our whole thing is like do something and then like maybe do something else after that. And then maybe after that, you choose to do something else. But it's not about doing everything at the beginning. So we always recommend, if people are like, what can we do? My top recommendation, next time you're out playing disc golf, pick up one piece of trash. And then the next time you're out playing disc golf, maybe you consider picking up one piece of trash. And then maybe that becomes a habit and you start picking up two pieces. And then maybe you choose to do something else. To me, it's like we get so paralyzed by needing to do it all when it stops us from taking the first step. And then what becomes important is what's after that. On the accountability note, I will mention something else that is a huge point of pride for us. And that's that being that things are at an all-time high with accountability, we try our best to be as transparent and as accountable as possible. But I can sit here and make a YouTube video and tell you how great we are all day. It's different for someone else to come in and audit. And so earlier last year, can't believe it's already 2024, we started the process of going through the rigorous assessment that is the B impact assessment to become a certified B Corp. And not everyone's familiar with what a certified B Corp is, but basically there's a company that has this certification that it's set up to be a third party that comes in, hosts this super rigorous assessment that can take anywhere from, I think they say 6 to 18 months. And they go in and audit the entirety of your company and make sure you adhere to the highest social, ethical, and environmental standards. And B Corp is super cool. You might have seen it from companies like Patagonia or Ben & Jerry's. It's surprisingly all over the place. So if you find the logo and you start looking for it, you'll see it. But that was something we pursued earlier this past year. And in September, we actually received our certification. And so Trashman became the first ever disc golf company to become a certified B Corp. And we are incredibly proud of that. So it's to me, it's like the question of it's twofold. The electricity that we're using to make discs, don't get paralyzed by it. But then also I want to do something about that. We out of pocket offset every single shipped box from our warehouse. Any shipping that goes out from our warehouse, we're offsetting. And when we chose to do that, we actually went back and retroactively did it for anything we've ever shipped. And that's like, it's a belief for us and it's our step and then our next step. And we don't in any way want it to seem like your steps should be those things too. It's just about everyone choosing to do something.
So for making discs, and I don't roll your eyes at this, in concept is relatively easy. It's one piece. It's an injection mold of one piece. Have you looked at anything else in the disc golf market?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And thought, we can do something about that. Whether it's bag inserts, whether it's umbrella holders. Like, I just think of these little pieces of plastic.
Stools.
Stools. Like, but I think of
bags like, themselves.
Yeah, exactly. What I think of like an umbrella holder that I put on the handle of my cart. It's a couple different pieces. It requires something you usually screw together, and it puts in, that's what I'm saying, like multiple pieces, probably more molds, more, you know, all these other things, as opposed to a disc, which is a single, more or less a single piece of plastic out of your molder. I know there's more to discs than the simplification that I'm giving it, but have you looked at other things in the industry and thought maybe we can do some of that?
It is so hard not to just be like, let's make this, let's make this, let's try that, because there are a lot of different things. We just, again, going back to our learning curve and where it's at, it's so high. We still have so much yet to learn that as the person leading the charge at Trash Panda, I'm choosing to make sure that our team is laser focused on the task at hand, which is learning how to make discs. So once we've learned how to make discs and we feel like we can replicate this and we can continue to expand the lineup, do we expand to other products? Potentially. There was one caveat to that though, and that was my very first sponsorship I ever took on YouTube was a free product trade for highlighting in a video with a company called Disc Dot. They were a brand new putting aid that you've probably heard of. And over the years, we continued a relationship. And then last year, they came to me and asked if we could be their manufacturer. And so actually, we are currently the ones who make Disc Dots. And Disc Dots now are all made out of recycled discs. So we chose to, Disc Dot almost feels like similar to Erica in the sense that it was like new products are always a step ahead of where we're at, but the value and the relationship alignment was just, we couldn't turn our backs on that. So we're stoked to be the ones making Disc Dots. So we do make one product outside of discs. And then minis. Well, I mean, the fact that anyone is making minis out of virgin plastic is mind blowing to me because the only thing you get out of that is automation. TPU is also just a complex and complicated plastic to run. The fact that you can make a mini out of anything, it doesn't have to perform whatsoever. So it is quite interesting that, minis are being made with virgin plastic. I think recycled plastic on the mini side of things for manufacturers, especially, you know, why not take your waste, grind it up, make minis? It seems very, very possible. So,
I was just looking. I have worked with Zing Mini, and one of the cool innovations that I feel like they have come out with is their Flapjack Mini, and it's you know, standard, so to speak, standard mini size, but it's very flat. And I don't know how much less plastic he's using. I've got to assume it's, you know, some degree, and it's 100% functional. In fact, it's quickly becoming like one of my favorite concepts for a mini because it's so minimal.
Oh,
and Craig, it's Craig great.
Craig is a fantastic guy, owner of Zing. Good friend. I'm a huge fan of his. The Flapjack is, I mean, if that's not the future of minis, I don't know what is. You can literally put it in your pocket and it doesn't make this massive indent in your pants. It's like, it's very simple and smooth, and it's, I mean, it's fantastic. So yeah, the Flapjack is a awesome mini.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. I don't know if I'll be able to get it into, but here's three of them stacked, or four of them. Sorry, four of them stacked, and just the fact that they, I don't think that's going to focus.
Probably anyway, the size of a normal mini. Yeah,
it's about the size of a normal mini, and I absolutely love those. As I was just introduced to them recently when he did some for me. So anyway. Yeah. As you said, Jesse, we could probably, have a 9-hour podcast with you with so many incredible questions and answers and developments and thoughts that you've had. So that means we're going to have you back because we can't break all our records in terms of length of podcast. But what I'm getting at is you too have your own podcast or have hosted 12 episodes. Are people expecting to see more of that? Or download more of that? What's kind of the plan there? What have you been doing?
Podcast is a question mark at the moment. So okay. We're in a little bit of a limbo right now with, we had a podcast called Patent Pending with Jomez, and I am so biased and a big fan. So, it's a cool show. If you like podcasts, interesting stories in the sport. But it's kind of in limbo right now, and we're not sure, just because there's a lot of fluctuation going on in all three brands that are now part of it with the Pro Tour coming into the Jomez scene. So there's a lot happening. Okay. We'll see if it comes back. It's a fun one. I have a blast making them. So, yeah.
Well, there are 12 of them out there, so people can still go consume them and take them in. And as you're saying, maybe we'll see if additional ones get made, but you do have 12 episodes that are all listed out there as well. So make sure you guys check that out. Jesse, is there any parting shots or final thoughts that you have for us before we let you go here tonight?
No, every time we learn something, we just learn what we don't know. So if you want to schedule a time to get back on and talk about all the things I still don't know, I would love to. You can try to get me to call people out again. We'll do this, we'll get it recurring. So it was a pleasure to come on and hang out with you guys. I'm a huge fan of what you're both doing. It's like, one of the things with Patent Pending specifically, the show that we did was just like, being able to talk to people who changed the game and being someone who's just been a fan of disc golf and been someone playing for over 15 years now, to me, it's like, I just have such admiration and gratitude to the people who are building this sport and who keep it going. What did you say? 488?
Yeah.
488.
Podcast 488.
What? Yeah. Do people tell you that's amazing every time? Because if not,
no,
that's insane.
Well,
that's awesome.
There's some longevity there. Yeah, we appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was an honor to come on. And thank you guys.
Thank you for everything you're doing. Honestly, you're doing in the sport, you're bringing attention to, I think, a much needed aspect that a lot of times nobody really thought of. I mean, like I said, we have kind of dipped our toe into it in the past, but doing something like what you're doing is amazing for the sport. I truly believe that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I know, some of the people that you work with, I've seen, some of this progression throughout the years, and it's truly inspiring. And if anything, we have to name this podcast to, why Terry and Johnny can't live up to Jesse's standards here and all the good stuff. He makes us feel shitty.
I'm okay.
He's such a good guy and does so many things.
I'm okay. I'm just glad there's people like that out
there. We missed the message. The message was we all do something. Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you very much.
Seriously,
Jesse.
Keep it up. It's been an honor and a pleasure to watch this, as we've said. And clearly, we should just like schedule you and assume you're going to be on every so many episodes so we can check in with everything you got going on. And you're welcome here anytime. So appreciate it. And have a good night and have a good start of the new year. And we'll look forward to seeing you out on the course or on the road somewhere at some point.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Jesse.
All right. See ya. All right. Take care. All right. What a phenomenal human. And again, I know a few of the people that are working over there. And then, as he said, teaming up with the likes of Erica and others, this community that he has built, is passionate and enthusiastic and emphatic, as they should be. And I thank him, but then also all of the community that surrounds him, because they're making up for the slack that you and I don't necessarily put out on any given day there, Johnny.
No, for sure. I like to think of ideas and make other people do them. That's my favorite thing. No, and I was just thinking, like, when I mentioned the ice bowl, that's probably coming up for a lot of people, or the big freeze, big chill, whatever you want to call your local area. All I think is, imagine for all the discs that are cracked, that can't be thrown, just don't throw them away. Keep them. And then one, reach out to a local tournament director and just say, hey, everyone drop your discs off at this event this year, and send them, and find a way to send them over to Jesse at Trash Panda. It's so much better than, as we said, you can't, the recycling companies won't take them. Throwing them away seems wasteful now. Like, I wouldn't have said that 5 years ago, but now that you know that there is a company out there that will take your broken, beat up, chewed up plastic that is still throwable, or maybe not throwable anymore, and do that. If it's still throwable and you don't want it, obviously, like we said, donate it to somewhere. Donate it to a local Boys and Girls Club. Send it to Uplay. Figure something like that out. There's plenty of places for that. But for those discs that are truly just like, oh, this cannot be thrown anymore, we have options now. And I'm really, really happy to hear that.
And he answered the question before I even had a chance to ask it, as to, like, when those get donated, you know, what if they still have life left in them, basically? Because I think of a place, you know, whether it's the crew of people we know going over to Africa right now, or going over to Thailand, or really anywhere. And like you said, even more locally, there's always a place where old beat up discs can be so valuable to some communities, even if they are, you know, just that beat up. But if they're beat up to the point where they're, almost just barely hanging together, then yes, getting them sent over to Jesse and the crew at Trash Panda seems like it makes the most sense, so they can do something good with them.
Well,
all right.
We do have another guest tonight, Terry.
What? Another one already?
We do. We have someone in our Disc Baron Digital Green Room. Is it still the Disc Baron Digital Green Room? If it's not, that's fine.
It certainly is.
I'll say it anyway. It'll always be there right now.
Well, here's a little bit of a preface to it. Just like Jesse being a first-time guest, we're going to have another first-time guest. And he heeded our advice, believe it or not. Maybe that's his first mistake. He said, I hear you guys talking about the opportunity for professionals or players to mention their new sponsorship and their new sponsorship alignments. And I have a brand new sponsorship alignment, and I'd love to make it a Smashbox exclusive.
So here's what we're going to need to do. He was on, and then our good friend Jesse jumped back on the video call
and kicked
him off. So we're going to have Jesse close out of this browser. If you want to listen, Jesse, you can find us on YouTube. And then we'll have our other guest reload his page so he can get back onto the call.
I should have given him a new number.
Should have given him a different number, Terry, because sometimes our guests do just hang out behind the scenes and watch live.
Yeah, so Jesse's got to hang up, and then once he clicks on that, then our other guest will be able to jump in on the call.
He'll refresh the browser, and then he'll hop on the call.
Hit refresh on your...
There he is. He's back. our guest is back. Sorry about that. Jesse stole. He wanted to come back. He wanted to make talk. He wanted to call some people out.
He wanted to recycle his appearance or something. Jeez. All right. With that, we have a brand new first-time guest as well, joining us from the Pacific Northwest. We have Kirby Schneider joining us. Kirby, how you doing, man?
Good. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, phenomenal. Thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Yeah, we are doing good. And I was just saying,
you're from the Pacific Northwest, but you got a Boston Red Sox behind you.
Yeah. I'm an investigative Red Sox fan. Johnny. Naturally born and bred in the East Coast. So, Red Sox fan through and through for sure.
All right, I'll forgive you. If you were born and bred there and just now, all right, yeah, we'll be all right.
Yeah, my family's originally from, like, the Buffalo area, so they're getting, like, way worse weather than I'm getting out here. Like, I heard you guys talking about, like, the big freeze, and, like, Seattle was, like, cold and windy today, but all in all, like, it was pretty all right, actually.
Yeah, not too bad. Well, good. Hopefully, you're not experiencing the nastiness that we have. So, like Jesse, your first time guest here on the show, and before we get to some of your big news and the exciting stuff you got going on, give us just a little bit of background and history and introduce yourself to the world.
Yeah, so, my name is Kirby Snyder, and I live here in Seattle. I'm currently one of the owners of Emerald City Discs, one of the pro shops here in Seattle. I own it with my business partner, Brian. So that's really, really, you know, we love that. We have, about 30, 35 people between like our pro team and our AM team, which is the AM team's kind of our box squad. So that's always really fun. Brian, my business partner, owns a fried chicken restaurant in Seattle called Bakabak. So that's kind of where all that kind of like stems from, at least. I started playing in like 2009. I went to culinary school in Providence, Rhode Island. And we would drive over to like Borderland State Park pretty regularly. And we would go and like play out there. And that was really like the first time we learned how to like play or just like, you know, throw frisbees in the park. And, instantly it was something that like I love to do. And then I moved out to the West Coast and just had a product of like not knowing people and stuff like that out here. I just started disc golfing more and more and kind of got myself like into the community a little bit. And then, you know, COVID kind of like shut the world down. I was a chef at the time, and my wife now and I decided that it was best to like kind of get me out of restaurants for a little bit. And I just started like disc golfing and, you know, like coaching and stuff like that. And the next thing I know, like we're opening up Emerald City Discs, and, you know, now I'm like over 1,000 rated, and like I'm just disc golfing like every weekend of the year kind of thing. So it's been amazing, and I feel like really honored, you know, to be like doing this with like as a career right now. So, yeah.
So, all right. So there's no current plan to go back into the kitchen. Not
at the moment. No.
It's really fun. Last night, I don't know if you watch it or not. My wife and I just started watching the TV series called The Bear, which is all about a gentleman.
Yeah. Oof. I've only seen season one, and like, there's been a few episodes that like my wife and I will watch it. I'm like, honey, like, I think I'm done for the night. Like, I'm kind of getting like flashbacks.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah. I think we're three episodes into the first season, maybe four. It's hard to tell. Those they're pretty quick, but they are relatively intense. And I'm a big fan in general of cooking shows. We watch Top Chef, all that other fun stuff. So it's all I can do to sit and I just quiz you about being a chef when you're here for disc golf. So that's awesome.
Yeah, my wife loves the fact that she has like a private at home chef now. So,
I'm many wives would like that. Yeah, she's very lucky. So.
Now, earlier in the show, we said too that when you get a job in disc golf, that doesn't mean you just get to play disc golf all day. But unless you're a top professional, perhaps where is your, dare I call it, work life balance? What does playing and practicing golf look like for you versus time in the shop or doing other things related to disc golf?
It depends on like the week, you know, some weeks where I'm like loaded with lessons and that, you know, practice is kind of scarce and, you know, it's more about finding time to putt and that kind of thing. I'm always like throwing during my lessons, like with my clients and stuff like that. So, as far as like, you know, field work stuff, I kind of like do that regularly out there with them and that kind of thing. And then I always set myself up with like one day that I can go to the course and practice, whether that be like a Wednesday or a Thursday or something. But, you know, whatever tournament I have coming on the weekend, you know, like one day to get out there and get like a round or two in, you know, just to get familiar with the course, kind of figure out what shots and what discs and that kind of thing.
What has your career consisted of in terms of where you're playing? Like, what are you seeking out? Is the pro tour, you know, getting on the pro tour ultimately a goal? What are you kind of looking at in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, currently I'm super happy with like what I have going on, like what I'm doing. I definitely am aspiring to be on the pro tour to some extent. It definitely is a disappointment that the pro tour isn't playing more West Coast events, because those are a lot easier for me to get out to. Mm-hmm. You know, so I've played the Portland Open the last 2 years. Last year I played Cascade Challenge. This year, Beaver State Fling will be on my list for sure. So those, you know, without a doubt, when it comes to this area, I'll be, you know, jumping onto. But we have a really, really good local scene in the area. You know, we have young local players like Carter Ahrens, who jumps on the Pro Tour a lot. Like, he lives locally here. The AM World Champion, Axel Olsen, who's just an amazing player. I've been playing with him for years since he's been in AM1. Like, that kid's going to go really far and be really, really good, you know? And then we have some like old pros, like, I don't mean to say like old, but like, you know, like Kyle Crabtree, like guys that have been around the scene for like a really long time, even guys that you might not know about, like Kenny Clark, who's like incredible. So we have a really, really good, like local competitive scene that is really strong and really fun to compete in.
Yeah. And speaking of competing, I was looking per the PDGA, you have 27 wins. You've played in 116 events. So that's, you know, almost a 25% win ratio in terms of events that you entered. And it looks like you picked up a number of wins this year. What's going right for you? I mean, what's your strong suit when you're out there? Because as I'm looking, you picked up like 6 or 7 or maybe even 8 wins, you know, between C and B tiers. So where's your strong suit? What's your game all about?
I think it's just like consistent play. You know, I like, you know, trying to disc down on a lot of stuff. So that's definitely kind of my strong suit, is like wanting to throw putters and like mids off the tee more than trying to bust out like my fairway drivers and stuff like that consistently. But yeah, I think just more than anything is just like getting out there and like being consistent and playing regularly. Like I love playing events, which is why I play so many events like year after year. I think for the last like 2 or 3 years, I've played like over 30 events per year. And it's just, I just naturally enjoy, like, I love getting out. I love playing. I love competing. You know, when I was a chef, it was all about like putting the hours in and like kind of like grinding at the workspace. And like, for me, like I take that same mentality into disc golf, where it's just like, I'm willing to put the hours into putting and, you know, field work and lessons and putting the hours at the shop, like all of it together is like, just, it feels, it's rewarding because it doesn't necessarily feel like work because I love what I'm doing, you know?
Yes, I do know. And eventually the hours start to add up, and then, you're exactly right that it doesn't feel as maybe taxing because you enjoy it so much. And hopefully that, you know, mentality forever stays. When you're looking at a schedule in, say, 2024, you said some of the events that you want to play. What excites you most about playing in 2024? And we'll get to your sponsorship announcement, but like, what are some of the things that excite you most about playing?
You know, I set a goal out for myself for 2024 that I was going to go to PDG Worlds and I was going to like throw everything I had into doing that. So, everything I've done this off season, like I've been like going to the gym and like working out regularly, and I've been like throwing like a ton of putts to the shop, kind of getting like my new bag kind of like in gear and ready to go and that kind of thing. And I'm doing it all with the mentality of being like, okay, like Lynchburg, let's go, you know? And it's like that, like, okay. So I'm really motivated and driven like to that. And like, I don't know like what that is going to look like or what that means for myself, like when I get there, but all I know is like, I'm going to get there and I'm gonna give it my best shot and, you know, see what happens. So,
so what are, you know, you just talked about getting your bag prepped and gearing up and switching over. What have you been throwing? What, you know, where's your career been in terms of any alignments, sponsorships, things like that? Kind of what's been your game plan or, you know, the method so far, the methodology up into this point?
So I mean, to my bag, it's just kind of been whatever is, you know, felt good and is like flown well for myself. The last 2 years I've been sponsored by Loft Discs, and they've been just like amazing to me. I was their highest rated pro for the last 2 years. And I mean, the Xenon that they have is like an amazing disc. I kind of joke that I was the highest or the best hydrogen thrower in the world, but I might have been like the only pro hydrogen thrower too. So, still whatever. Counts.
Yeah, still counts. It still counts.
Yeah, it's like, marketing.
Yeah, it's like if you're the only child, you're still the favorite child, you know? So,
yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, but you know, I had like destroyers in my bag. Like I had like a Zeus, okay. Like zones, like pretty like basic stuff, you know. I was really known for throwing this this green Luna that I would throw a lot. Like that was kind of like my go-to disc before the hydrogen came in my bag, and then I was just throwing the hydrogen like all over the place. Like I love that thing.
Okay, so you've mentioned Loft, obviously. You've mentioned some Discraft, some Innova. With all of that being said, how adamant or active were you in getting a sponsorship? Or possibly changing sponsorship, or was it a matter of someone eventually reaching out to you?
You know, every off season I do the same thing where it's like, I'm going to reach out to as many companies as I can, you know, same reason, honestly, why I got on this podcast tonight is I shot you a message and said, hey, like, I would love to do this. I'm interested, you know, can we, you know, is this possible kind of thing? And, you know, I find in disc golf, the more you kind of just like ask and, you know, shoot some messages, the more like people are willing to kind of like talk to you and kind of give you opportunities that you might not have gotten, you know, had you not spoken up or, you know, said something. So, you know, I was a big on that and good get around and kind of see like what offers were available. I did get a handful of like different sponsorship offers, a lot of which I didn't think kind of valued me as a professional player and, you know, like the value that I see in myself, like as a store owner and like that kind of thing. So, you know, one of the biggest like things going into the off season was to not sign a contract that's, you know, I'm not worth or whatever. And I was like more than willing to go back to Loft too. Like, I love those guys. Like, it was a really tough decision actually to step away.
Well, and it sounds like you, so it sounds like you've got a lot of people who are in your corner. I'm looking at the chat and there, truly, it's good to see. There's a lot of people from the Pacific Northwest here that are calling out like great TD, great person, great teacher, great store owner. Like, it's nice to see.
Well, those are his wife. Good cook.
She's got four accounts and she's just, right.
Which one now?
Yeah,
honey?
Yeah. So, line in a room. Yeah.
I honestly really do love to see that when we bring somebody on and there is a group of people that takes the time to show their support. It means that you really are the real deal, so to speak, as far as a human. I know nothing about your game, but based on what everyone says here, I would come to you for lessons.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, thank you to everybody in the chat. That's awesome. You know, especially to the Box Squad. I know you guys are in there. Thank you so much.
Nice. So my last question before you make your announcement is, being a store owner, and I know a handful of store owners, I also sell a lot of discs and have throughout the years and was sponsored by various manufacturers. Does that put any awkward or weird sense or obligations on you? You know, you may be sponsored by X, but you're selling, you know, ABCDEF at your store often. Was any of that negotiated or talked about or concerned in terms of kind of the different hats that you wear?
Not necessarily. You know, I think with anything else, like, it's a business, you know what I mean? And I think that's like kind of the core of it. Honestly, like, my big thing with like at Emerald City, like, when people come in and they're looking for stuff, I'm not necessarily trying to like sell them a disc so much as I'm trying to help them find the disc that they want to buy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not out there really to be like pushing certain brands. Like, yes, like, if somebody asks me like what I'm throwing, I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm throwing this and that, you know, and oh, I really like this. Like, oh, if you like that, but you're looking for a new version of this, you know, I might recommend this kind of thing, right? Like, just like that kind of stuff. But if someone comes in and they say like, hey, I want a Destroyer, I'm not going to try to push them off of a Destroyer. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I don't know how many times we get to say this, but for the first time ever, a sponsorship announcement, an Smashbox exclusive sponsorship announcement coming from one Kirby Snyder. Let's hear it.
Yeah, so for the 2024 season, I will represent Discmania Discs.
Wow.
So really looking forward to it. Yeah. Thank you to Avery Jenkins for all the support and for believing me for next year. And really excited to get out there and rep the brand.
And what I forget me because I don't necessarily know the Discmania tour levels and stuff. Like, are you on a specific team on Discmania? What does it entail?
I'm on a pretty low level right now. I see it as just me getting my foot in the door and being able to kind of grow within the company from there kind of thing. You know, I got into it with like a Discmania Combine, actually. I don't know if you guys have heard of them doing those.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I drove up to BC in Canada, which is 2.5 hours north of here. And when it did a combine, it did horribly for that day, just a bad day of throwing out of myself. But, you know, chatting with Avery, and he, you know, kind of called me like a week later and was just like, you know, I see your potential. And, you know, like I said, like me owning a store, you know, definitely helps. So, yeah, my deal with Discmania is amazing. I'm really excited about it. Not only does it help myself, but it does kind of offer some benefits to the shop as well. So even if I necessarily am not getting as much, the store, all in all, you know, it all benefits us like as a whole. So.
So you can spill the tea on who Discmania is signing. Awesome. Let's get you kicked off the team right away.
Yeah, tell us. Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe more importantly, as I just...
Smashbox. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
As I just said in the chat, they clearly, that's why they were okay with letting Eagle go, because they had to make room for you and your contract. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Kirby's going to be huge in Europe.
That's really it. Yeah, you know, it's the, instead of the Crush Boys, because I'm 33, it's the Crush Men now. So let's go. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. What is your strong suit? You said earlier your consistency, but when I think about just like the actual throws, putting, is it your putting that's phenomenal? Is it your driving? Do you have big distance? Average distance, like how would you kind of rate your game in those ways?
Right-handed, backhanded thrower. I'm really good at like turnovers and like that kind of stuff. Okay. I would say like for like pro tour, I have like less than max distance for the pro tour. But for like our local scene, like I'm a far thrower. There's guys like we have, you know, kids like Carter Aarons around here who, I mean, that kid throws a mile. So it's like, yes, I throw far, but like that kid throws like really, really far, you know, like that kind of thing. So, you know, when people ask me like, how far do I throw? I like to consistently say like 425 accurately, and then I can push it more if I need to. But realistically, you know, 425 pretty accurately is like where I'm at, like distance wise. I like throwing my putters a lot. Like I, you know, being sponsored by Discmania now, I got to bust out this old Sky God 2, and I'm throwing that thing maybe like 350 or so right now, like really, really straight with like a little bit of turn to it. And like, that's like kind of where I like my game to be at, is when I can get those putters like straight, flat, and kind of like riding kind of thing.
Very cool. And then how about forehands, rollers, overhands? Is there anything that stands out in any of those types of categories?
Yeah, not a strong forehand player, that's for sure. Okay. Forehands definitely more like utility / like working on it for sure. That's kind of my off-season goal, is to add a little distance to that, which is just honestly in working out and like throwing more for distance, because I spent the last few years just kind of throwing it for accuracy more than anything. You know, some of our local courses, they have some like really like touchy rollers that I really like throwing down, and I'm pretty good with those too. But we're looking at like, you know, 325 to 360, you know, kind of get it down, get it left, get it right kind of thing. So not necessarily like big distance rollers so much as kind of like woods rollers. I like to do those a lot too. So
Kirby Parker on the board says you're an elite putter thrower. So,
oh, thank you. Yeah, that's I try my best for sure. So
and Ollie out there is very excited for everything that you got going on. I'm guessing you know who that is.
Yes.
Yeah. Ollie's the man for sure. Yeah. He's awesome.
Awesome. Now, in all seriousness, obviously, big news just dropped yesterday that Eagle McMahon leaving the team. There's also plenty of speculation as to if someone like Gannon and or Alden potentially maybe joining the team. Antala was in a conversation at one point. Do you have any of those conversations? Is any of that? Are you privy to anything? And I don't want any, you know, even if you did have it, I don't want it. But are you privy to any of those types of team conversations with other people?
Honestly, disc golf is so small. I do hear, you know, some stuff from people that I know kind of like here and there kind of thing. I don't really think I know anything like groundbreaking. And I'll say I really don't know anything at all. Sure. But, you know, I've heard a couple of like random rumors from people that I do kind of believe and trust. But nothing that's really, you know, nothing like solidified, nothing's been confirmed. I will say this like Eagle thing has been like one of the better kept secrets in disc golf, because disc golf is not necessarily like secretive with stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It's been talked a lot about, like, you know, if there's a rumor, like usually like that comes true. And like, we really haven't heard too many like strong Eagle rumors. So it's pretty interesting, yep. Actually.
Yeah. I feel like they were out there, but they weren't quite as certain as some of the other rumors that we hear, or maybe seemingly as obvious when everyone's, I mean, none of us are that bright when we're like, oh, I bet you Gannon leaves. Like, I don't think, you know, anyone's going out on any major limb there. Eagle seemed a little bit tougher to believe, albeit a rumor. I feel like it was a little bit tougher to believe just because like Simon, that was you know, his entire, you know, professional career.
Yeah.
So
I have to ask, Kirby, I'm going to go back to your cooking days, what is the favorite thing you make for your wife? Or we'll ask, what's your wife's favorite thing that you make for her, and what's your favorite dish to make?
I mean, it kind of depends on like the week for her kind of thing. I make this roasted chicken dish a lot for like when her parents come over and that, and she hates it for the first like couple hours because I have to like take the bones and have them like stewing in water all day to kind of like cook down. So she always complains that the house kind of smells like roasted chicken. And then her parents come over and I like actually finish the dish and she's like, okay, this is amazing. You know, like it's all good kind of thing. So that's kind of been my signature dish. Yeah. That's been my signature dish for a little bit. When I was in restaurants, I was doing a lot of like fun stuff. Like I would kind of mess with like molecular gastronomy a little bit and kind of do like one of the fun things I would like to make is like bacon flavored powdered sugar and stuff like that. Like I had a lot of fun with it and I still kind of like will do that once in a while. I'll kind of get the itch for like a real project kind of thing. But, yeah.
Willie DeFries?
You're right. Yeah.
He's got, I think, a restaurant down in Chicago that I've been meaning to get down to. Like I want to make a weekend of it and go down there with my wife because I hear it's phenomenal. And he does the same thing. When you said the molecular gastronomy is all about just these crazy ass, like different.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so excited to get down there at some point in the next, hopefully the next year or so. Cause I've wanted to do it forever, but that's awesome. That's really interesting.
That guy's like totally next level. Mm-hmm. Like I've read a few of his like cooking books and kind of like seen him on like some shows and stuff. And like what he does is like way next level. He's incredible for sure. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I think I'm already guessing some of the, freshman, teammate hazing or, dinner parties and who's going to have to cook. When Team Dismania all gets together, like, well, we got this guy. He's going to have to cook for everybody.
Yeah.
I also know
that if I have a choice at Worlds, if someone happens to invite me, I'm going to go to the Dismania party, Dismania house for dinner.
There you go. Yeah. We'll be throwing down for sure.
That's right.
So this will kind of tie these pieces together, which is, it was just even, I think last week we were talking about, you know, being on the tour, the idea of some food trucks and things of that nature, or, you know, having that type of, business model or plan. And there's a professional chef that tunes in every single week. Aaron, you're probably out there. Could that ever be a backup plan? Could that ever be something that would interest you whatsoever in terms of either following the tour or having a food cart or something like that? Or is that just not your style?
It's an interesting idea. I don't know if that's necessarily for me. I just don't know if, like, I don't know. I think traveling the country with a food truck would be especially difficult. You know what I mean? Those things are a little lunky at times. So I don't know that, you know, that. Yeah, I'm kind of out of restaurants at this point. Like, I like cooking and that, and unless I'm forced to go back, I'm not at this point. So, yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Is there anywhere you want to go play? Let's say international, or presumably anywhere that you are looking forward to mixing some of that, you know, that excitement of food and playing and the experience, the culture. Is there anywhere that jumps out at you when you think about where disc golf is now taking us all?
Well, my wife is Croatian, and her and her family have been to Croatia like a bunch of times, and her dad like knows like where their roots are in Croatia. So I think that would be like a fun like trip with them, at least, you know, to kind of jump into like where they're from a little bit, but then also kind of show them like a little bit of like my world and kind of like, you know, one of the bigger events of our side. So yeah, I would say Croatia.
All right. Well, believe it or not, I have a recommendation for you.
Okay.
You in Croatia, you go to the Drava Forester, which is single-handedly the most fun disc golf tournament on the planet. You go to the Drava Forester, you hang out with everyone there, Dinko, Amaya, and the entire crew. You partake in that, and then you get the wine tastings, you get fancy dinners, all as part of it. Plus, it's this incredible party for 4 or 5 days. Like, easily one of the greatest experiences of my life is Croatia for 4 or 5 nights. So I I'll see you at the drive of Forrester. I mean, you just pretty much see it.
That sounds great. Yeah, yeah. We'll figure it out. Let's do it. Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. That, yeah. Seriously, that is that sounds like a perfect tie for you in order to get there. So I love it.
Yeah.
All right, Kirby, is there anything else you want to share with us before we let you go? We got a big shout out to, do you know Lauren Hagen by chance? No?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, Lauren, huge super chat. So, Lauren, huge thank you to you. We got to call that out.
Thank you, Lauren.
Very significant. So we very much appreciate that, Lauren. So thank you. Anything else you want to share with us in the rest of the Smashies, though, before we let you go here tonight?
No, I just really want to thank you guys for letting me on here. You know, I messaged you for a couple of days and looked at my business partner. I was just like, honestly, man, if I hear back from them at all, it'll be incredible. And when you shot me a message last night and said, let's do it, I like woke my wife up. I was like, honey, I can't believe this, you know? So, just, you know, thank you guys, especially for giving me this opportunity and, you know, letting me get on here. I really want to thank my wife, Ellie, for letting me, you know, disc golf and, you know, kind of just supporting me and being my best friend and all that. Thank you to Loft for the last couple of years of, you know, sponsoring me and, you know, kind of being there. Thank you to Dismania and specifically Avery Jenkins for next year and, you know, kind of setting up that. And thank you to my business partner, Brian, for also just like encouraging me and kind of setting me up for this. So, yeah.
Well, heck yeah. Well, it's not too often we have someone that we haven't talked to or met before hop on and have such incredible news and such a good, inspiring story. And we wish you nothing but success here in 2024 for both your play, your sponsorship, as well as, of course, your business and the store, along with everything you're doing in terms of teaching and just spreading the love and the joy of disc golf. So it was honestly, it was a pleasure to meet you. And I'm so glad you reached out and we're looking forward to some big things. We'll keep our eyes on you for 2024. Hopefully we're talking to you more or talking to you again later in the year or something, getting an update.
For sure. Yeah, anytime you guys want me back, just let me know. You know, I'd love to do it. So,
all right, man.
Thank you guys so much. Yeah, appreciate it.
All right, everyone. That's Kirby. Have a good night. Congratulations.
Thank you,
Kirby.
You too. Bye.
See ya.
So when you see Kirby's name on, you know, some of the you know, the Pacific Northwest leaderboards, you'll know where you saw him first. You'll know where he made his announcement here that he's now part of the Discmania team. I'm really excited for him. And again, I said it before when he was on, when someone comes on and you see suddenly a large surge in the chat just praising someone like that, it's a good sign to me. And I think it's a good,
absolutely.
I think it's a really good move from Discmania. We've talked about over the last few weeks whether or not there is room for the what we're calling kind of the middle pros right now, the regional pros, the people that aren't 10-20, 10-30, those 1,000 rated people that in your area are highly influential. And it sounds like Kirby fits that bill. So I'm excited that Discmania is, you know, behind that.
Yeah, taking a chance, and it doesn't seem like it's much of a roll of the dice. Clearly, it sounds like he's already kind of a proven entity there. So, again, congratulations, Kirby, and awesome that he thought of the idea to come give us the Smashbox exclusive to tell us where he's going, and that Discmania very fortunate to be able to team up with him and bring him onto the team. So congrats. All right, with that,
I was going to say, while we're talking about sponsorships, let's go through the last week and see what has come up since our last conversation. I think the last thing we really kind of talked about last week was Emily Beach staying with Innova. Since then, we've seen a few other names announced. Chandler Fry joining. Mm-hmm. I believe he's doing the Thought Space. Team Infinite combo. Yep. So Chandler Fry signs with them. We see let's see here. I had a list here.
Was Eagle that McMahon left?
Yeah. Braden. Was it Braden Sides who joined Team Castoplast?
I think that just came about today. In fact, if I recall,
no, that was announced on the 4th.
I saw it today.
Yeah,
oh, no, okay.
That,
I apologize.
It was announced on the 4th. We see that. Let's see here. Ezra Robinson joins with Flight Factory. He's staying Factory, as far as I know, he's staying with Prodigy, but also Flight Factory Discs. So that's great. Holland Hanley also joined Flight Factory. So we're seeing some additional sponsorship from some of the players, and that might have been one of the things that Holland was hinting at when she was last on our show. Allie from Allie Smith. She is on. She also is doing the Thought Space Infinite combo. We need to come up with a good. You know how like celebrities have like a combo name.
Yeah, the Bennifer. You know,
the Bennifer. We'll have someone come up with something good for Thought Space and Infinite. Like, I'm not sure yet. Paul Kranz comes to MVP, follows Simon, his good friend. He's over at Team MVP, along with Silva Saarinen, which I think was a little bit more of a surprise that Silva moved over to Team MVP. We mentioned tonight that Erica Stinchcomb signed with Trash Panda, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Stacey Ronsley also signing with Flight Factory. So that's really cool.
Man, let's see. Really building out that team.
Yeah.
And I say that because the two main people we saw, and they've of course have others, so I'm not dismissing any of them, but the two main most advertised people that we saw before being Heimberg and Madison Walker, and now seeing that they continue to grow and develop their team and have more sponsored players on it, awesome to see.
Yep, Tristan Tanner to DGA. He moves over there, kind of signs. He was talking, I think he can do a little... I think he's doing, I don't know if it's strictly DGA because he was kind of pumping up some Discraft discs as well. I don't know if he was just before that. Aiden Scott goes to with OTB discs for 2024. So that was one of the
I feel like Aiden, now is Aiden, I don't believe I.
Don't mix up this. Aiden Scott, Evan Smith, and Evan Scott.
No, I know who they are as much as I still mix them up once in a while. I at least do know who they are because I filmed all of them.
I know you
but
have.
But Aiden, is Aiden still with Prodigy and has just added OTB to the...
I believe...
That was my only...
I haven't heard anything about Prodigy. He hasn't made an announcement that he's left Prodigy. So I'm assuming he's joining. He's still with Prodigy, but also the OTB additional. Kind of like Paige Pierce was on Team OTB as well as Discraft. Sure. So I believe it's an additional sponsorship. Cole Rodallin continues with DGA. That was announced, I think, yesterday or the day before. So that's okay. Very cool. He signed in an additional agreement. And as you had said, the big announcement that we saw, which I was saving for last, was Eagle McMahon leaving Discmania.
What?
Because I figured that would be the one we'd probably talk most
that
about.
That is not possible because I listened to the Shanked or Hangin' Loose podcast, and the gentleman on there goes by Shanked DG. He told us that Eagle's not leaving. This was like 3 weeks ago. He said there's no way Eagle leaves.
Well,
and I just happened to be watching that podcast.
He was wrong,
last
Terry.
Night, and it was on the day that Eagle left. So of course I had to take a jab because I've never been wrong about anything. Yeah. So
I follow him. I follow him on Twitter. But yes, it's clearly
again almost any other time. Had I listened to their, I was trying to catch up on their podcast. Had any other time that was said, it would have been no big deal because obviously everybody's just guessing. Yeah. But I literally caught up on that podcast the day Eagle left, and it's the same day I heard him say Eagle's not leaving. There's no way he leaves. So the timing was comical to me. But
well, all the rumors are that Eagle's going to Nike now that Nike and Tiger have split. So yes, we'll see how that goes. And then the announcement today was Hannah Wynn joining Team Discraft on the tour team. No announcement about Chris Clemens yet, but Hannah has a video out there talking about her and Dark Ace as well, which I believe she, I don't know if she's part owner or she's just
she's just sponsored by them.
Just a sponsor. And for those of you that don't know, Dark Ace is very much in the same vein of music and specifically more metal, darker music, and that's right up with Hannah Wynn's style, as well as Bob Giulio. So my little conspiracy theory that Bob just wanted friends to go to metal concerts with, he's just buying friends, and and he'll have that. So Hannah Wynn joins Team Discraft on their tour team that was announced today. Moving teams, I think we saw that Morgan Linz was moved up to the from the underground to the tour team as well. That was announced today. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Congratulations to all of those promotions for those that got them. I'll be the first to admit, I guess I was doing random things today. The Hannah Wynn news had slipped past me. So this is this was actually
shocking
news to me,
Terry,
to see that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Congrats to Hannah.
So we're, and Chris Clemens made a very funny post after the announcement underneath of that, more or less just saying, oh, so that's where you took the van. And with a little smiley face, because hinting that maybe he isn't going to discraft, but I have a feeling that he is either going to discraft or DGA. That's my guess for Chris Clemens. I think that they'll probably stick within the same family of discs, but I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe truly they were there, because I mean the van was spotted and it was for Hannah. And that was the big announcement. Maybe Chris has something completely different lined up.
Yeah, I'll be. I guess all we can do is wait and see. And Chris, if you want to be here and have some conversations with us, of course we would take you. We'd love to talk to you. I will jump on it and talk about next week. We're going to have, I believe, two. Probably more in-depth sponsorship conversations. I don't know if one's being spoiled. I'm going to say it. We're going to talk to Eagle McMahon, first of all. He's obviously announced. He is planning to announce next week. What? Eagle McMahon is announcing next week. That's what he had told me, is that he'll be announcing next week. So he's going to be on our show, and we'll be able to talk to him next week. Also, I don't know if he's told the rest of the world, but I believe there's going to be an announcement by one Dutch Napier, Batman.
Oh,
of course,
yeah.
Longtime Smashy. We've had some communication. He recently had parted ways with Prodigy, and I believe he's going to be all set up and ready to go and have a conversation about what his plan is here for this year. So next week, believe it or not, we're a whole week scheduled out, which is very rare for us. But next week, ahead of time, I can tell you we're going to have Eagle McMahon along with Dutch, a.k.a. Batman.
So that's pretty fair, cool. Eagle is not going to announce his sponsor on Smashbox, although that would be great, but he will talk about it.
Oh, we could have left him hanging. Now, I believe per Eagle and I having a conversation via text yesterday, I think he's going to actually be making his announcement come Monday. So, we will not be breaking the news. It will not be an exclusive at that point, but we're still happy
excited.
To.
Well, we're always happy to have Eagle on. It's always awesome to talk exactly. with him and just get his, he's a very intelligent kid, and to get his perspective on things. And I can say he's a kid because he's very young. He's almost still, it's just a little more than half my age. So
I was going to say he could be your kid.
He could be my kid. Thankfully
well,
he's
Not with how well he throws. I don't think he has any of your genes, but he could logistically be your kid at the age of 25 and you being much older.
You can say it, Terry. I'm 45. 45. I was
like a record. Like a record, right? Anyway, all right. Is there any other major news we want to knock out now? Do we want to close down, start an after show? What are you thinking here?
Well, I
had a couple of great interviews, but
well, we did have some awesome interviews. It's really nice to be able to interview, especially. I mean, I love having Jesse on, and it's great having Kirby, someone who isn't necessarily known throughout the nation, to get them on. The only other news I'll quickly rattle off: the 2023 PDGA Player Awards were announced. So these are not the DGPT awards. Remember, those were announced earlier. No. These are the PDGA.
Not the Smashy Awards. No.
Not the Smashy Awards. So the announcements were last week that Calvin Heiberg took the MPO Player of the Year. A lot of consistency. I know. Okay. The PDGA Rookie of the Year on the MPO side was Paul Kranz, who we just spoke with. On the FPO side, it was Morgan Linz, who we just mentioned. The FPO Player of the Year was Kristen Tatar.
I don't remember voting for her, but okay.
I don't think you get a chance to vote in this one, Terry.
I'm kidding.
So I'm really upset that nobody voted for Kristen in this. Not a single person.
No. That is insulting, if you think about it.
Super insulting that nobody voted for Kristen Tatar here. And I think, yeah, I think those were the announcements. Those were the winners of the PDGA Players of the Year and Rookies of the Year. Okay. I remember this is calculated different than the DGPT ones. The DGPT ones only take into account, I think, DGPT events and majors. The PDGA ones also include a small subsection of A-tiers. They include Elite Series events. They include majors. And there's something else. And there's also
no voting.
And there's no voting. There's no voting on the PDGA. Yeah, it's strictly a numbers-based, and the weighting is a little different. It's a different setup than the DGPT ones. So that's, you know.
Yes. Okay. All right. I don't know if there's anything else that we have that's pressing that can't be covered in the after show. See a lot of our regulars out there. Thanks so much for joining us, you guys. Keith and Tim. Another Tim, Ray, Pinhai. Lots of our regulars. Dutch is here. Uh-oh.
Hey, Dutch.
He's like Beetlejuice. We just got to say his name, and he pops up. But, yes, excited to have him talk to us next week about what he's got going on. All right, well, I say we close it out for the regular show. And if there's anything we forgot, well, then it gets talked about in the after show. And we can go from there. I'm going to apply some chapstick. So with that being said, big, big shout out to Kirby. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to Discmania for what appears to be a stellar pickup. Avery Jenkins out there doing the recruiting as a team manager and holding things down. So congrats to them, and that hopefully will be a beautiful partnership. And then, of course, thank you to Jesse over at Trash Panda. Again, we could probably ask him 3,000 more questions that intrigue us. So we'll certainly have to keep our eye on him and what they have going on as well. And we'll get more updates from him as the year goes on. With that, that's been podcast 488, second episode of 2024. Thank you guys so much for joining again. I'm going to say again, thank you to Lauren with the significant super chat. I know there was another one in there somewhere, so thank you. We appreciate you guys for joining. We're going to take a very, very quick break, and then in the after show, we'll have a giveaway and come up with some other fun stuff to talk about. For Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. That's 488. We'll see you in the after show. You step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.